Good morning. Alyssa, you could have said, yeah, this week we did live in a village. I just want to comment on you ladies this week. I know that the question is always, should we do it? Do we have time? I want to say this, and I think in years past, we've pretty much done the work at home, and everybody worked hard. But what I saw this week was ladies here working in shifts, working together, enjoying each other while working. That is something that does way more than that money you raised. That money is a part of it. And I did some quick calculating. And if you take an average of 30 years, and I brought the average down probably somewhere around $8,000 a year, figure that up. It's a lot of money. But it's not about the money. It's about working together, being a team, and creating something that cannot be taken away from you. And I just want to give you a big compliment for the work you did. What's amazing is that with less people, the income seems to stay the same. I don't know what God's doing, but He keeps doing it. So we're going to let Him do it. This morning, I would like to look at a subject that is a doctrinal subject. It's a subject that is one that we do try to avoid talking about simply because it's hard to, sometimes it's really just hard on these subjects to know what God wants us to talk about. And the title of my message is The Case for Separation from the World. And when I give that title, some of you already have a picture in your mind. And I'm just going to come right out and ask you a question. When I use the word or say the word nonconformity, what is your first thought? What is your first thought? Just a couple of you. The way we dress. Okay. Different. Okay. I had to think a minute. I thought you were thinking different from James, but yeah, you were. Anyone else? How we respond. Our conduct? Those are all really good answers, and they all fit. So, how often do we look at the wrong thing when we are looking at some things? Or I didn't think through that question very well. What happens when our focus is on the wrong thing? That's more what I want to ask. We often, if our focus is on the wrong thing, even though it's a right thing, too often we gravitate in that direction rather than the direction we're supposed to go. Hopefully I can answer that question here in a few minutes. But so let's look at another question. What does it mean to conform?
Act right.
Uh-oh. I heard that before. I didn't even have to look where that came from. Took me back about 50 years.
But it goes deeper than that.
It goes deeper than that. That's right.
Deeper than acting right. Conforming to God's law.
going along with? Fit into a mold. And that's actually more what the dictionary gives. All of those are good, they're part of the answer, but that is actually what the dictionary gives, to give the same shape, outline, or contour to, bring into harmony or accord, to be similar or identical, to be in agreement or harmony, used with to conform with our plans. The second one was interesting, to be obedient or compliant, usually used with to conform to another's wishes or to act in accordance with prevailing standards or customs. The dictionary for the word nonconformity is very simple. Unconventionality, the practice of not conforming to established pattern of behavior, lack of agreement, the state of being in disagreement with something. So the question I would have, and we're not going to take time on it, but as Christians, when we make a case for separation, does it necessarily mean that we are just in disagreement with something? And if it does, is that the right place to focus? Interestingly, in my study, I found this. The doctrine of nonconformity is not seeing how different we can be from the world, but how much we can be like Christ. It means that we get our principles for living from the Word instead of the world. So if you're paying attention, you can see a pattern of what I want to talk about. And what I'd like to do this morning is to show what the doctrine of nonconformity is and how it affects our entire life. And unless we really understand what nonconformity is, we will lose it. But I don't want to focus on nonconformity this morning. There's another place that we want to focus. So I want you to turn to 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 to 17. Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For everything in the world, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of his eyes, and the boasting of what he has and does, comes not from the Father but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but the man who does the will of God will last forever, lives forever. So there's a couple things here that I want you to just think about. I'm going to point out. The first thing that John says is, do not love the world or the things in the world. Now, look at the second part of that verse. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And I find that interesting, because how do we define love? How would John define that here in this passage? And we're not going to go there, but... And there's going to be you're going to have more questions than answers really at the end of this, but that's for you to decipher and work through. Then verse 16, for all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. So again, now what he's doing is answering the question I just asked, how would you define that? The desire of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life. The world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever. So there's two things I want to pull out of here. Anyone that loves the world, John says, the love of the Father is not in him. In verse 17, he says, whoever does the will of God abides forever. John makes it very clear that the entire world system is under the control of Satan. 1 John 5, verse 19 says, we know that we are from God and the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. So everything around the world system, the world government, the world model is controlled by Satan. And I think we can all agree that right now it's pretty obvious that that is what is going on. The world system is contrary and opposed to God and His holiness. The values and practices of the world have no place or part in the kingdom of God or in the life of the believer. So there's two questions we want to look at as we work through this topic. What should the Christian's attitude be toward the world and the things of the world? And number two, what difference does being a believer make in the way we live and appear in the world? So I want to go to Romans chapter 12, verse 2, which I'm sure you knew that was going to come up sooner or later. Paul makes the case for a transfer. In the first 11 chapters of Romans, Paul was talking about the doctrine of grace. He talked about the doctrine of salvation, and he spent a lot of time on that. And in chapter 12 now, he changes and he comes to a practical part. The practical part of the salvation of grace. And he says, therefore, I urge you, brothers, in the view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. The King James uses the word or the phrase, instead of being conformed, it says not fashioning yourselves to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. The Greek word here describes to fashion or shape one thing like another. This verb has more special reference to that which is transitory, changeable, or unstable. The Greek word here references conduct. In other words, conduct, lifestyle, values, and practices are the things that this word encompasses. J.B. Phillips says, his commentary says in verse 2, this is the way he describes it. Don't let the world squeeze you into its own mold, but let God remold your minds from within so that you may prove and practice that the plan of God for you is good. Meet all His demands and moves toward the goal of true maturity. Let's look at 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Paul gives the reason why. Verses 14 to 16. Do not be yoked together with unbelievers, for what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? What does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will live with them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they will be my people. In our culture today, in our society, things have changed. In years past, more of our people stayed home. They worked the farm. Some of this was easier to define than it is today. Most of us today work out. Not right, it's not wrong, it's different. And it means that we must be a little more careful in the way we deal with our business, our businesses, and in our interaction. Because I would say that 80%, maybe that's high, I don't know, I'm guessing, of our interaction, it will be with unbelievers. Or will be with people who have a whole different model of living a Christian life than what we do. Again, some of that's not wrong. However, we need to be firmly rooted in what we believe and why we believe it. And Paul makes it clear that in our business dealings, there needs to be a separation from an unbeliever. There's been times when when I had opportunity to link up with someone who was not a person of good character in their business practices, and I didn't feel good about it for some reason. And as I walked through all of that, eventually it became very clear why. Because at some point, I was going to either have to give in to what they believed, or I was going to have to walk away from it. And it was easier to walk away from it in the beginning. The second part of verse 2 in Romans 12 is be transformed. What does that mean? He says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind, then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is. He also uses one word that he uses in 1 Peter 1, verse 15. And I want to jump to that for a second. 1 Peter 1, verse 15 says, let me back up to verse 14. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, be holy because I am holy. In both of these verses, Paul, the writer, uses the word but. So he gives an example of something that was going on before. And he says, now something's changed in your life. You had an example that was not a good example. So what I want you to think about is, what happens from here? Do not be conformed to the world, but not this way, but another way. Not conformed to the world, but what? Conformed to the likeness of Christ. In 1 Peter, he goes on and he says, I want you to not look at what you're not supposed to conform to, but look over here at what I want you to conform to. How often do we get distracted and we're looking over here? Well, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I not do this? Should I not do that? And often we ask ourselves the question, well, what's wrong with it? Is that the question? Or should the question be, what does God want me to do? Are we conforming? Are we trying to not conform? Or are we trying to conform? Romans 8:29. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. We are to be conformed to the image of Christ. Philippians 3:21, who will transform our lowly body to be like his glorious body by the power that enables him even to subject all things to himself. The word conformed in Romans 8:29 and the word transformed in Philippians 3:21 actually are the same word. And they both have to do with character. So in the first part in Romans 12, it has to do with conduct. This has to do with character. Hebrews 12:2. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Colossians 3:10. And have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of his Creator. This idea of putting on is the idea of putting on a coat. It's the idea of putting something on. We talked this morning about what does God want us to do, to sit here and wait for him to show us his will, or does he want us to put something on and go? And here the writer says, I want you to put this on. I want you to look at Christ, to be conformed to his image. If we focus on the nonconformity side of the subject, it will be a negative, dark, maybe even hopeless, except for the conforming of our lives to Jesus Christ. Nonconformity is not seeing how different we can be from the world, but how Christ-like we can be. If you go to Exodus 34, chapter 11, verses 11 through 16, and in Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 4, God gave the children of Israel some very specific things in this doctrine of being separated. And this is, and we're not going to go there because it's going to take too much time, but he was very clear when he said, I'm giving you this line, I want you to do this, and I want you to do this because, listen to this, because if you don't, they will turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. So God knew that the influence of Satan, the influence of the world, a lot of times is greater than the influence of God, the influence of good. Now, I'm not making that statement and saying that we should not be involved in reaching out to those people, but I am saying that we must be careful because their influence is pretty good. And the more we hang out with them, and I'll just give you a quick example. So a friend of mine, he grew up in a whole different situation, a whole different setting, and he had no problem going to the bar with the guys having a drink. Now, he didn't have a drink. He drank Coke. For me, I don't think that's a good thing for me. I've never been tempted by it, but I just don't think it's a good environment to put myself in. He would play ball with the guys, and then they would go to the bar with him. We'll leave that alone, but there is this thing of my conduct and my character that we must look at. What does my conduct show? What does my character show? Quickly, 10 characteristics of worldliness. Disobedience to God. And if you want to write these down, I'm not going to go to them. Romans 8:7. Wickedness, forms of wickedness, blasphemy, murder, lying, robbery, intemperance, profanity, pride, licentiousness. I didn't say that right, I know, for you school teachers, are all evidence of the influence of the God of the world. We look at that word wickedness and we say, oh, I'm pretty good, I don't have that. But then when I look at what comes under that heading, maybe not. Number 3, pride, Proverbs 16:18. Number 4, covetousness. And in parentheses, the writer, the commentary that I used, also said that covetousness and selfishness are very closely related. Colossians 3, verse 5. Ambition. Webster says, an eager or an inordinate desire for preferment, honor, superiority, power, or the attainment of same thing. Often this desire is fanned by the desire for fame and preferment, which becomes the undoing of many people. And keep in mind what happened to Absalom. He was young. He was talented, he was likable, but he died because of his sin. Romans 12:10 says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love, honor one another over yourselves. Number 6 is impurity. Impurity in our thoughts, impure speech, impure social relations. Number 7, intemperance. Alcohol, drugs, etc., mind-altering substance, and many more things. Intemperance covers a whole lot of things, more than just what I just stated. Number 8 is clothing. The way a person dresses says a lot about that person. In the same way you can see pride in the way they dress, you can see when a person thinks little of him or herself. Number 9, recreational activities. Be careful what we do with our spare time or our recreational time. Ecclesiastes 11:9. Number 10 is dishonesty. 2 Corinthians 4, verses 2 to 4 talk about that. There are 9 characteristics of godliness that I'd like to look at. Number 1 is obedience to God. If disobedience to God is a mark of the world, then obedience will be one of the distinguishing characteristics of the children of God. Titus 2:12. Number two is humility. Matthew 18:1-4. Number three is purity. Matthew 5:8. Number four is love. 1 Corinthians 13. Number five, temperance. 1 Corinthians 9:25. And again, here's where I want to go with this. Moderation in action, thought, or feeling. So temperance covers character and conduct as well. We often hear that word used in specific ways. We don't often hear it used in our character and our conduct. Number six, modesty. Number seven, to honor or respect. As our relationship with Christ grows, so should our reverence from Him and His Word grow. As we experience Him, the more we are impressed with His goodness, greatness, holiness, majesty, and grace. 1 John 1:7. Number eight, integrity. What we should hear about Christians. His word is as good as His bond. Truth is embedded in His character, and honesty and uprightness mark His course, not for His advantage, but because it is part of His DNA. Number nine is peace. 2 Timothy 2:24. In conclusion, I'm going to make 6 points based on this information that I just gave you. Number one, the people of God and the people of the world are two separate groups of people. Number two, to be a friend of the world is to be an enemy of God. Number three, for the people of God, it is wrong to conform to the sinful fleshly practices of the world. Number four, God's people have been called to a life of holiness, righteousness, purity, faith, commissioned to win the world to God, rather than to confirm the world in its wickedness by partaking of its ungodly practices. Number five, that in this separate, holy, God-honoring life, the people of God are letting their light shine in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, thus drawing the minds of people to God. And number six, pure religion requires a complete separation from the world on the part of those who have experienced it. I can't close this morning without a quote from the Queen. Saw this week and it really impacted me. This was part of the quote. This is the last part of it. The Queen evidently was a very, very staunch Christian. And one of her chaplains had been preaching on the second coming of the Lord. And afterward, in a conversation with that chaplain, the Queen exclaimed, "Oh, how I wish the Lord would come in my lifetime." "Why?" asked the chaplain. Why does your majesty feel this very earnest desire?" The Queen replied with quivering lips and her whole countenance lighted up by deep emotion, "I should so love to lay my crown at His feet." An example of humility. An example of a life patterned after Jesus Christ. The challenge for us today here is, if we strive to be more like Christ, we will automatically be different from the world in all of our activities. In our conduct and in our character, there will be a clear line. If you will turn to song number 352 in the hymnary, I've asked Scott to lead that as our closing song this morning. Oh, to be like Thee, blessed Redeemer. Let our focus be on Jesus Christ, not on the world. We need to see that, but this is where we need to be. We need to be following Jesus Christ. You can stand. Father, this morning we realize that we live in a world that is a mess. We live in a world that is contrary to everything that you designed. And yet, it's real. We live in a world, we live in a time, we live in a culture that wars with each other. There's conflict. And there's conflict in our own hearts sometimes because we see things that we think we would enjoy. And yet we realize that in seeing that and in realizing that our focus should be on you and to become conformed to the image of Jesus Christ, it brings sacrifice. It brings pain sometimes. Father, help us most of all to focus on what you want us to be, on what you want us to be transformed into, to put on, to follow. And in doing so, we point others to you. Help us to be faithful, Father, to the calling that you've given each of us. Help us to seek how to do that better with each other. This week, I pray that you would walk with us. Help us in our interaction with our business associates, with the people that we work for, the people that we work with. Most of all, help us to portray the characteristic of God. The characteristic of Jesus Christ. I pray that this week you would walk before each of us. Help us, Father, to honor you in our conduct and in our character, in all that we do. In Jesus' name, amen.